Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Friday Filibuster. You just missed a conversation with Taco Bell, so too bad for you. So, but we're going to get rolling right now and jump into a cauldron of film and entertainment delights. So let's introduce the crew. We have Eric Astroslager.
Hello.
Daryl Loomis.
Hi.
Mac McIntyre.
Hackadoo.
The busiest man in New Hampshire, Michael Staley.
Buenos dias.
He is here. He just came back from the commercial audition. But, yeah, we're going to kill some time for you, see what's cooking. A lot of stuff happening, I assume. So I don't know. So Mac, bail me out. Is there a lot of stuff happening?
Sure.
What do you got?
Okay, next. Let's see.
First of all, my Netflix queue is empty. So yeah. I've got the window open while we can talk on the podcast, and I'll be adding movies while we record.
Oh, exciting.
So, but beyond that, I've been playing the new Tomb Raider game. You guys heard about this?
Yes.
And it's really good. I'm really enjoying it, but it's also really hard, and I'm getting killed a lot.
We got to get you enrolled in a summer camp.
I know.
So does Laura Croft, did she just have a double mastectomy? Is that...
yes. Oh, too soon.
Well, this is the young Laura Croft.
Oh, okay. All right.
That would be the worst quick time event ever. But yes, also too soon.
So is it pretty cinematic, Mac? Is it?
Yeah, very cinematic. It's like playing a movie. And the way it goes in and out of the cutscenes, it's like really smooth. So you're playing, and then it's a cutscene, and then you're playing again. And it's not like, it's just, it moves really smoothly from one to the next. So it really is like playing a movie. And it's really a lot of fun. You know, it's like, you know, there's a lot of, you know, jumping and climbing and solving puzzles. I'm good at all that part. Then all of a sudden, 20 guys come out of nowhere and all start shooting at me. And that's when Lara Croft dies horribly. So those are the parts that I'm having to fight my way through.
Literally and figuratively.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, our best wishes for you. So now we know that your most anticipated movie this summer is about to drop pretty soon.
That's right. I'm really excited. Yeah, Star Trek.
Star Trek Into Darkness, yes.
And my fingers crossed that it'll be good.
All right. So we expect a deep and insightful review next week.
I hope so.
All right. I hope I didn't set the bar too high for you. Or too high for Eric, who has to follow your report.
I know. I also have a video game to talk about quickly. It's been a couple of weeks since we've done like a regular episode. So I haven't actually played this game this past week, but I wanted to bring it up on the show. Dave, you and I both got Injustice, Gods yes. Among Us, which is the new DC Comics fighting game from the guys who made Mortal Kombat. And it's a lot of fun. One of the kind of key features and the main part I've played so far is a story mode that seems to – it's lengthy enough. I think the actual cutscene portion is probably somewhere in the two-hour range. With kind of fights sprinkled in, but it probably took me like maybe 4 hours to play through, and it's tied into, and I'm not sure which came first, series that's going on in the comics right now called Injustice, where there's essentially an alternate dimension where Superman is a bad guy, he's basically a dictator that's taken over, and certain heroes and villains are fighting him with him, and some aren't. The game is well made. I like all the fighting stuff. Everyone has cool powers. Dave, did you ever get your way through the story?
I did not. When we played, it was the last I played it.
Okay, yeah, me too. But it's pretty well done story. The voice acting is solid. It's funny to play the story mode. Just because it's essentially structured like an adult film, in that you basically have like a scene of people talking, and at some point they square off, and then they go at it. Except in this case, they fight instead of. but it's like every time they would just like swing into this like square off fighting stance, that made me chuckle a little bit because it was just sort of as out of the blue. I've been told, from reading that I've done articles and Time Magazine and such. But yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. New Yorker, that the thing is the cartoons. Anyway. But yeah, Injustice is a lot of fun. I have to get back.
Pretty good. Eric's got some moves. So if any listeners out there want to challenge him,
yeah, you can come. I'll I'll be someone.
Yeah,
deliver a pizza and
that's all. That's right.
Okay, so which
what's that
studio? NetherRealm, was that the name of the studio?
NetherRealm is a studio. Yeah, they did Mortal Kombat, which was very good too.
Yeah, so which characters are you guys playing as?
Oh, there's a bunch there. Some I didn't recognize. Like, Ares, I guess, is that a character in the DC universe? The Frost Queen, right? Is that her name? Shoot. I'm trying to think like that. I mean, the big shots are there. You know, Flash, Superman, Batman's in there.
Batman, Green Lantern's pretty fun.
Green Lantern.
Joker's good. There's, like, Solomon Grundy. And,
there's Lex Luthor in his battle suit.
Yeah, Black Adam and Shazam and
Sam, yeah.
Wonder Woman. And yeah, it's got
Aquaman.
Aquaman's pretty awesome, actually.
Move.
Yeah, it's a really fun game. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, if you're not into fighting games, then you're going to get so much enjoyment out of it. But I think they did a good job with the, you know, the story mode and the tutorials. It's easy to mess around and have fun. It's not as exacting as something like Street Fighter.
I mean, the segue in all this is it's just kind of interesting how Warner Brothers is going to develop their DC universe, right? Of, I guess, overall entertainment, but I'm sure they want to get into the movie. I mean, they have to be salivating at the Marvel stuff, right?
I don't think they're going to be able to pull it off. I don't even think they can come anywhere close to it.
No.
Mm-mm.
Even with, like
lightning in a bottle.
Even if, like, Man of Steel does $1 billion, and we know that Batman is, you know.
But look what they've done so far.
Cash register.
Like Green Lantern.
Sure.
And,
right.
I mean,
yeah.
I just don't see it happening. And Warner Brothers is not, it's too big of an organization with too many cooks. You know, Disney lucked out because Marvel was a separate entity unto itself that they then bought.
Yeah, true.
So as long as Kevin stays the head of the Marvel Studios and there's some concern of whether or not he's, when his contract is up, that he's going to leave, that Warner Brothers has any chance of recreating this type of thing. Now, that's not to say that they're not going to give it a shot, but
I mean, Justice League is happening, right?
Well, it's happened twice now, and it's, you know, faltered and stopped. So we'll see what happens.
I don't, Matt, what do you think? Do you think? Sorry, Eric, I was just going to quick.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, Mac, do you think DC, does the mythology have the juice to do some damage in the theaters?
It could, but, you know, it's like, I mean, Marvel went about it really smartly. You know, they took characters like, you know, Captain America, which everyone says is a boring guy, and they made him interesting and likable. So you've got to take that same approach with, say, you know, like someone like Wonder Woman, who, you know, people think is old-fashioned or whatever. There's kind of a lot of baggage there, and got to just kind of make her really a dynamic character that audiences can be really invested in. Ditto, Flash, Green Lantern, you know, the whole crew. And so, yeah, it'd be really difficult to pull it off. You'd probably need, like, just, you know, some one person with a real, you know, guiding hand.
I mean, Green Lantern could have been cool. It was just a bad movie. It was just a tedious, boring movie, you know?
And the interesting thing from Marvel is there were no expectations for Marvel. I mean, the stuff that Marvel had done in the past, like the Roger Corman Fantastic Four movie and the Spider-Man TV series with Nicholas Hammond, that kind of stuff was all bargain basement crap. So anything that they did would start out, you know, impressing people. Whereas DC has all these proper, you know, given the fact that Linda Carter was doing Wonder Woman in the 70s with this occult television series. You had Michael Keaton and Tim Burton doing Batman. You had Christopher Reeve. Right. So those expectations were really high, and they had to live up to that stuff. And so far, I mean, Chris Nolan did that with Batman. I can't see – unless Chris Nolan is going to sit down and make everything super serious and he's going to take the guiding hand like a Joss Whedon, I just don't see it happening.
I think there's sort of issues, problems with it. Part of it is that it's been – since there is that long history, it's so unfocused and there's not that one guiding hand. And I think another part of the problem is that the Marvel movies, you know, for all their issues – and I have issues with pretty much all of them – they're all fun, you know what I mean? And Warner has – I mean, not Warner, but DC, the DC Comics movies have taken a much more serious turn with something like, you know, the Christopher Nolan Batman movies. And you can't really replicate that with all those characters. And I can't imagine a really dour, you know, gritty Justice League movie being fun the way Avengers was.
Well, No, go ahead. I've just finished that thought.
No, I was going to say that I think without that, it's very difficult to kind of create a kind of cohesive comics universe. Because when I think of like Marvel comics, like the comics you sit down and read, I think of it as being very kind of complex, being very kind of super, not serious, but I don't know. I find it very difficult to get into Marvel comics where I enjoy DC comics a lot more for whatever reason. I guess partly the characters and partly just the fact that I can sit down and follow one hero for a while without having to like buy a billion books. I probably would if I don't know. That's ignore that. That's probably not right. Anyway, fun. They gotta have fun. They need to have fun.
But that does speak to the whole thing, and I don't want to digress too far here, because I grew up as a Marvel zombie who just, you know, in the 70s and 80s read Marvel comics and loved the interconnectedness of all these characters operating in the same universe and crossing paths quite often. Now, DC, on the other hand, has already had success in the animated realm with both Batman the Animated Series and the two Justice League series that they did do, which were fantastic. And really, there was, Matt, correct me if I was wrong, there was a real element of fun to those.
For the most part, yeah, I would say so. They are skewed towards younger viewers.
Right.
But that influence definitely comes from Bruce Timm.
Right.
Who definitely has an old-fashioned sensibility in both his art and his storytelling.
Yeah, maybe that's what they should focus on. Maybe you know, Marvel gets the live action and DC takes the animated stuff, because they've really been focusing on that with, like, the Dark Knight Returns movies, especially the only ones that I've seen recently. I mean, that's great stuff, you know. They can do things in animation that you can't do in live action easily.
Well, I do think a lot of this will be governed by what Man of Steel does at the box office.
Definitely.
I mean, really, right? I mean, if it delivers, then there's going to be more talk. I don't know. We'll see.
I think it's safe to say there will be more comic book movies.
I think that's it, yeah.
That's my bold prediction for the future.
Wow.
Yeah, Ant-Man. It's on the horizon.
Really, I mean, yeah, really, I just want Ant-Man and Guardians of the Galaxy. Everything else can just take a backseat.
Okay, Daryl, what do you have?
Let's see. Nothing video game-wise. Lately, over the last, I don't know, month or so, I finally sat down and started watching Battlestar Galactica Reboot.
Okay.
And I'm about, I want to say about 7 episodes from the end.
For the first time?
Yeah, for the first time.
Yep.
Wow.
I watched the pilot movie when it aired and liked it, but as it goes with me, I never actually went back and watched the show proper. It's an interesting show, and it's easily the best thing that sci-fi ever made.
Yes, I mean, far and away, leaps and bounds, yeah.
But I like the show. But the one thing that I'm having an issue with that I don't tend to have an issue with most shows that I stick through is that the show hasn't allowed me to develop any emotional connection to any character at all. I could care less what happens to any of these people.
Hmm. Really? Even Adama and Rosalind?
Couldn't care less.
Really?
Couldn't care less.
Yeah,
I mean,
pretty potent.
It's fine. I mean, I guess I don't like what's her name?
Dabba?
I don't even remember. No, the president.
Rosalind.
I don't even like. I mean, I don't like her as a person. I like Adama and his son as people.
I mean, the father-son dynamic is probably the most interesting stuff going on there.
No, and I think there's interest there, but as far as, like, there's a lot of really odious characters in Mad Men, say.
Yes.
But when I watch an episode of Mad Men, I find myself emotionally invested in 3 or 4 of the characters, depending on what's going on. Not Pete Campbell, but many of the others. I find myself emotionally invested in it, even if what they're doing is garbage. This, and I don't know what even to really say about it, because I do think it's a well-produced, well-written, and nicely conceived show, but the emotional connection for me is just not there. So,
well, to me, that show did its best when it was leaned away from some of the crazier mythology that they kind of got wrapped up in.
Yeah, I think that's right.
It becomes so mythology heavy towards the end. Like, the best stuff is, like, I'm trying, you're 7 episodes away, so I guess you're getting out of this episode. But I don't know, when they kind of get, the stuff I found compelling was the nuts and bolts of how do you rebuild a civilization on the fly. You know, I thought,
right.
The survival aspect of it.
Aspect. And then, actions. Like, my favorite episode remains the first episode after the pilot movie, 33. I mean, that remains my favorite episode of the whole show, where, remember, the Cylons are attacking every 33 seconds, or 33 minutes, I believe. Mm-hmm. And they have to just keep jumping over and over. So, and that was just a great kickoff to the series, and it's still my favorite, but.
Yeah. No, and I think it's a good show. And I'm easily going to see it through to the end. I watched Razor, the standalone movie.
Yeah, what'd you think of that?
I thought it was interesting as far as a as
Razor's
far
not as bad. The other goes. Ones aren't great. I'll tell you that right now. Like the plan, don't mm-hmm. expect to find a plan reveal.
Okay. One of the things I like Michelle Forbes from Homicide.
Yeah, right.
And so I was really happy to see her brought back for something with it because yeah, I find her an appealing actress, and you know, I like a lot of the, I like a lot of the performers. I like a lot of the performances. I like a lot of the story. But as I sit here, like 7 hours from the end of the series, I couldn't care less. Ultimately, and I think that's a weird feeling because mostly I wouldn't have stuck with a show so long. And obviously, it's been like 3 weeks or 4 weeks that I've actually been watching it, so it's not really that long. But this many episodes, I wouldn't have stuck with it if there wasn't something to hang on to. But emotional impact is just not there.
Mm. All right, well, we shall see. Michael, what do you got? Anything to report?
A mouthful of food right now.
All right.
Let's see. Video game stuff. I actually started to play Lego Lord of the Rings.
I heard good things about that.
It's like after my birthday. It's more open world than any of the other Lego games, which is kind of weird because I've played through Indiana Jones and Star Wars and Batman, and it's all very story-focused and straightforward. And then you go back and you can play, you know, the open. But this is open world from the beginning, and it loses some of its focus and some of the power, I think, by doing that. But that's just me. I haven't gotten too far into it. They actually use real dialogue from the film.
Really?
So Lego has now gotten into apparently licensing all that out because the new Batman one are new voices, the Batman 2, but you know the Lego characters didn't used to speak at all, and that was part of the humor to it.
Right.
So we'll see. I was going to go see Oblivion the other night, didn't get a chance to see it. I have not yet seen Iron Man 3, and I'm hoping to go see Star Trek on Friday. So right. I am behind in my film reviewing.
It's okay. Hold your head up high. It's all right. let's see. Well, I guess I'll just quickly touching on Mad Men. You said you brought it up, Daryl, which was an impressive segue from Battlestar Galactica to Mad Men. I thought the season has been kind of hit and miss, but the last couple episodes are pretty good. There's been a lot of activity within the world of Sterling Draper. Cooper, Draper, Cooper, Sterling, Price, whatever. So, liking it still. Still liking Mad Men. The Don Draper character is pretty confounding to me right now. So, I don't know. Daryl, what do you think? Are they burning goodwill with him? Are they making him boring?
I don't think they're making him boring. I think they're basically revealing what he is, which is a guy who can't do anything but the persona he's written for himself, because I mean he's not a real person.
That's I think you know? That's the crux, right? Like I mean, so that's the key to the whole show is how he can sell things to other people because he's got a gift for that, but he himself is vaporware.
And he sold it to him. He's sold the line. He sold the bill of goods to himself.
Yeah,
this is all he is. You know, I mean, he's the guy who's gonna cheat on Megan with Linda Cardellini, which, you know, is not the most interesting. It's not the most interesting thing in the world because it's been done and done and done, you know, with all of his affairs. But
although they went out of their way to show that, I mean, Megan is an awesome wife, you know.
Yeah, she's great. She's great. And that's and Betty Draper certainly wasn't.
Right. But they kind of show that even when you have like an awesome world class wife. You know, I think the show will not. It doesn't matter, right?
Because there's nothing in the world that's going to satisfy Don Draper outside of dying, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And however it ends, you know, whether he kills himself or somebody or Megan kills him or who the hell knows, he'll never be satisfied, and he's just not a guy who's gonna live long, at least not in any kind of real sense, you know. So. Yeah. I think they're doing fine with it. I think some of the fashions, maybe it's just that it's 1968, but some of the fashions are really irritating.
I mean, the stuff that bugs me about Mad Men continues, like, they always just kind of, like, when they encounter a big historical event, things just kind of get a little weird.
Yeah, they go a little overboard.
They go a little overboard, so I don't know, like, I could, I mean, I know it has to happen, but I just don't. It doesn't serve the show super well.
I don't think it served the show in a few instances, but there were a few things like the opening of Shea Stadium. They made a big deal out of that. That was in like season 2 or 3 or something like that. When historical events happen, they go a little bit overboard. But I think ultimately the show is running towards its logical conclusion.
Which is Draper is the guy who's falling in the opening credits to his death.
Yeah, of course. You know, and at the start he falls into his comfy couch with a cigarette, but you know, now that fall is a little more dire, and you know, you've got, you know, Pete Campbell almost being a more honorable character than he is, and you know, I think that's logical. I think there's always gonna be a hard thing, and I see this with Battlestar Galactica watching it, when you've got a dedicated end, you have to wrap stuff up. You have to turn things into, you know, you have to wrap up plots, I guess. And as they do that, you start to see, I think, sort of the demise of people, and it's not as satisfying as the open ended. What are they going to do next? Kind of attitude.
Yep. All right. Lightning round. We're just going to do a quick lightning round, stuff we got coming for the site. So, like, yeah, 20 seconds to update us. Mac, go.
All right. More comic book action with the animated Superman Unbound.
All right.
It's not very deep, not a lot of story, but it was fun to watch. It's Superman and Supergirl in this one are teaming up to fight Brainiac. So adding Supergirl to the mix kind of... you know, adds a little bit more character development for Superman other than just, you know, flirting with Lois. It gives him someone else to interact with. So I thought that part of it worked. But mostly it's just a lot of action and punching and explosions. So not much on story, but it was fun. I enjoyed it.
All right. Eric?
This week I'm reviewing the Aquabats Super Show first season. This is
The Aquabats from Yo Gabba Gabba?
Yeah. Some of the same people who created Yo Gabba Gabba have the show. The Aquabats are an actual, you know, musical group that play songs for kids. They've done some songs on the show. And this thing, they play sort of like a Power Rangers style super group, and they go up against various, you know, ridiculous enemies. I sat down and watched the first couple episodes with my daughter. She was kind of scared of it. So maybe a little bit of an older group than Yo Gabba Gabba. You know, the first one has like someone called the Man Ant, who's like a person with a giant ant head, which, you know, is ridiculous and funny. But I guess when you're four, the idea of giant ants is a bit more terrifying. So,
yes.
So it's got a good sense of humor, though. Good music.
All right. Mike, what do you got? Anything?
My review of Arnold's The Last Stand went up. We talked about that offline.
That's right.
But I also have Leonard Nimoy's complete series, 6 seasons of In Search Of.
Oh, what a great show.
Yeah, and it's interesting to go back and look at it as a time capsule, because it was the template for all of the stuff you see on reality TV now, all the stuff on Discovery Channel and History Channel. They were doing it, you know, 40 years ago. But some of these stories still hold up. I mean, despite the fact that we know a lot more information now than what they did back then when they were doing these things, there's still some very fascinating episodes that introduce. You know, there's a whole thing in the Lost City of Atlantis. And
oh,
stuff
that's
that
what
I
was going to say. Yeah, when I was a little kid, the Lost City of Atlantis episode of In Search of fascinated me.
And it still holds up. There's still that mystery, and there's still, it's really well written. It's well done. Some of it's really cheesy at points, but you know, for a show of that magnitude that was on PBS,
Leonard Nimoy's gravitas is fantastic for it.
Absolutely. And they also included the one season that they did, I think it was for Sci-Fi Channel, that Mitch Pileggi from X-Files did. They tried to resurrect the show for one season.
Oh, it's a reboot, yeah.
Yes. So there is an entire, I think there's 12 or 13 episodes of that included as a tacked on in here. So...
Nice. I could talk about the Fishmasters, but nobody wants that.
Oh, Dave, I love you.
Yeah. So I just submitted that review. Just dropped it in the Redditorama. Full
get that up Friday.
4 paragraphs I squeezed out for that bad boy. So.
Well, I'll tell you what, those guys sent that review copy to Melissa, so they will be very happy that there will be anything there to promote their.
Yeah. So I'm glad we're at. So it's. I don't know. It is a – so now I – so we're – so it's a show from 1992 on public access. It aired at 1 a.m. on various TV stations.
Yeah, I saw a trailer for that on a cheapo DVD that I reviewed recently.
You actually – wow, because the DVD I have is two discs and like a Microsoft Paint.
It's like Metalhead's Fishing, right?
That gives it too much credit. I don't know. Using any kind of adjective in a clever way gives it too much credit. So, yeah, I don't know what to tell you. Yeah. Mac, what's next?
Wait, okay, you do me.
Oh, sorry, Daryl. What do you got?
Oh, Daryl.
Yeah, if you actually care.
I don't. Go ahead.
Which I'm not sure you do because it's from I did it about a week or so ago. And I'll be quick. It's a movie in the tradition of the old Peter Jackson movies, like, Brain Dead and Dead Alive. Australian splatter comedy called Body Melt. One of the most disgusting and one of the most hilarious movies, I've seen in years. A company is promoting vitamins that give you the perfect body, and they send free samples out to this little cul-de-sac of people, and they take them, and it's not so perfect, and the mutations that arrive and the splatter that ensues is absolutely classic, and I couldn't recommend it highly enough for people who like Brain Dead. It is. There's enough fluids in this movie to fill two Brain Deads.
That's impressive.
So if you care.
That is impressive. No, I do care now.
No,
I've heard
no
that,
I know so. You do. And I appreciate that.
All right,
what's
Mac.
It called?
Body Melt?
Body Melt.
Yes. Body Melt.
Okay. A great 90s porn soundtrack. Stay blog-sided as well. So, you know, it really covers all bases.
Daryl, have you seen The Boarding House yet?
No.
Have you heard of The Boarding House?
The Boarding House.
Yeah. I would Google that one. I had the pleasure of viewing that, which is like immediately out of print and worth a good amount of money, Mike, might I add.
Really?
So, yeah. Well, I'm glad I didn't throw that in the garbage like I wanted.
Always bet on Boarding House.
Always bet on Boarding House, yes.
Is it worth my time at all?
It is something to laugh at, I'll put it that way, so.
Well, the thing with Body Melt is you're really laughing with it.
Yeah, now this is something you laugh at.
Right.
So, all right. Mac, what's next?
Okay, so far on the Netflix queue, I have Mad Men Season 1, Disc 1.
Oh, good.
Battlestar Galactica Razor.
All right.
You mentioned Mad Men going overboard, so I added Overboard with Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn.
So
great. Aquabats, Disc 1. And I just now added Body Melt.
Wow.
And looks like In Search Of isn't on Netflix.
No, it's a it's a small label called Visual Entertainment. So my guess is I'll ask the rep if they plan to go streaming with this, but right now this is like a $200 set.
Wow.
Very high price point.
How about Boarding House, Mac? Is that available?
Oh, let me check.
Yeah, I doubt it.
I just looked it up on IMDb. The cover looks terrible.
Oh, my God.
The woman sinking into a bed.
Oh, sweet.
It reminds
okay, I just
me
added
of
it.
Bed that
is this available?
Yeah. Well, it's not on streaming, but so I'm getting the discs on the little red envelopes.
You might as well just keep it, because according to Amazon, the used ones are going for $65.
Holy crap. Oh.
And the new ones are $109.
Jesus.
So I would order it and keep it and cancel your Netflix subscription as well. So, yeah.
I thought a podcast is admissible as evidence in a court of law.
That's true. You could get the Region 2 Boarding House, though. That's not as cost-prohibitive, though. So.
Okay, we're moving on?
Yeah, go ahead. We'll take us
on. All right. We are going to take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray. And if you're listening at home, you can play along. We're going to go to DVDverdict.com, click on the upcoming DVD releases tab. And from there, we're going to find the link for the cover art gallery for May 21st. We're just going to talk about whatever we see on the list here.
And right in top center, I can see a movie that Dave should be reviewing. Bailey a Night in Cowtown.
Yeah, that was on our product list, right?
Yes, it's there.
I'm familiar with the Bailey franchise.
Yeah. It's a franchise?
It is. I reviewed Bailey a Christmas dog. Bailey the Christmas dog.
Was he wearing a kerchief?
I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. What is Bailey wearing now?
Is this a rip off of the Buddies? I mean, is it kind of in that single buddy mode?
Bailey doesn't
talk. Oh, he doesn't talk. Oh, okay.
No.
Does he play basketball?
No, he doesn't do anything.
Nah, then forget about it.
The Adventures of Bailey Christmas Hero. That's the one I reviewed. Yeah. Oof. Give it a 65. There you go.
It's not bad. I mean, that's bad, but it's not that bad.
Okay. But thanks for the encouragement, Darlene.
Well, it seems like your cup of tea.
Hey, there's Captain America, the 1990 version. Huh?
Yes. Yeah. How many people are going to buy this?
Yeah, confused grandmothers will buy that for their kids. Yeah.
The Red Skull in that one looks like a burn victim.
And he's not a Nazi. He's an Italian art dealer.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Well, talk about just making a boy. That's the first time I've ever heard of someone retconning a Nazi villain to decide. It's usually the other way around.
We need something worse than a Nazi.
An Italian art dealer. We don't want to offend any of the Nazis.
When did Jason Statham have time to make a movie with Jennifer Lopez?
Yeah, this was in other theaters in like... Yeah.
Yikes.
This movie.
I like Jason Statham, but I'm not going to watch that.
Me neither.
There's the Vacation, a couple of the Vacation movies out on Blu-ray, mm-hmm. which some people will like.
Yeah, variations of Vacation have now been released. This is the 30th anniversary, which probably has no more bonus features than what the other.
I'm sure.
There must be some kind of wager between the producers of Vacation and the Evil Dead 2, who can re-release them the most.
Yeah. I hear the 31st anniversary edition is going to be great.
That's fine. I'm fine with that one. It comes in a miniature family truckster case. That you can...
It's not an impressive week. True Blood.
Yeah, True Blood. There's The Last Stand with Arnold.
Yep.
That's right.
Suppose anybody saw Beautiful Creatures. Based on the best-selling book.
Yeah. Is it a book? Okay.
How about Lego Batman the movie? What's up with that?
Well, they did Lego Star Wars the movie, which was absolutely terrible. My nephew loved it, but it was painfully bad, and I don't expect... It's basically Tall Tales, right, or Traveler's Tales, the guys who did.
Yeah.
There are cut scenes, and they decided, you know what, we're just going to make a 30-minute film out of this.
Oh, it's just cut scenes from the game?
Well, I mean, that's how it started. And then they wound up actually trying to create some kind of narrative. But it's just a bunch of running gags. And it's just loosely tied together. At least that's how the Star Wars one played out.
Fine.
The trailer for this one appears to be like just all cut scenes from the game. I don't know what new material they've created.
Yeah.
And you got the... totally unnecessary remake of April Fool's Day.
Yeah, I was wondering if that was a remake or if that's...
It's a remake. I don't know that it's a remake per se, but it's certainly not the original one. And I can't imagine it's not a remake given Black Christmas and Prom Night and every other cruddy remake.
Yeah. Boarding House needs a remake, I think.
Excellent. Some things are sacred.
That's true. Thank you, Mac.
Yeah, all right, they remade Subspecies. You know, those are out. Those are out this week too.
Yeah, I saw that.
The old Subspecies.
If you're a fan of Hayao Miyazaki, Howl's Moving Castle and My Neighbor Totoro are both available on Blu-ray for the first time from Disney this week.
Oh. All right. Well, let's see here. Wrap this up here because there's not a ton.
Yeah.
Of that. Now, there's Teen Wolf, but we don't want to get into Teen Wolf, I guess. So, interrelease, please, on DVD release of the week, Eric.
The Burning.
There's an ointment for that.
Mac?
How about White Heat?
Good. Daryl?
I'm going with a 5-card stud.
Damn you all. Took mine. That's a good one. Mike?
Small Soldiers.
That's good, too. How about the Saddle Club?
Oh, there you go.
Okay. Good enough.
That looks pretty terrible. Although, maybe it's got a little make it or break it magic in it. You never know.
It's
Okay. Time to wrap this up with our ambush topics. You know this works. So we'll go right to the rookie. Michael, what do you got?
Well, I had something that I'm wondering if we've done it already, but probably movie franchises that would serve well as a Lego game.
Even if we did already, that's a good one. That would serve well or that we would like to see?
That you would like to see.
I'm going with right. Lego Hellraiser.
That's cool.
And the whole, like, breaking apart of bodies? That was
really yeah, no, it works perfectly well.
I rip your soul apart block by block.
There's a puzzle box, yeah.
There's a puzzle box, yeah. That's right. It's the whole bit. I think Lego Hellraiser would be gold.
Lego Hellraiser, yes.
Well, this is a TV show more than a movie, although I guess there was a short movie between seasons. I think Lego 24 would be pretty good.
Well, and you guys heard about what they're doing next season, right?
Oh, we're ready.
They were going to do a movie, right? And then they decided for some reason to give us 12 episodes.
You know what? Now you remind me. I did want to – maybe we'll put this on to next week, just kind of talking a little bit about what's coming down the pike. Because there's some interesting shows that have been greenlit. I don't know how long they'll last, but we'll see. All right, but we'll save that for another week. Maybe that's our teaser for next week. But yeah, Lego 24 would be quite Lego good. And the removal of Chase's hand, it would be easy to do.
Sure. And the cutting off that guy's head in what, season two or whatever.
That's right. Yeah.
Easy too.
Get the hacksaw.
Lego Chloe would just have a frown the whole time.
Lego Tony Almeida with his detachable soul patch.
Yeah, pour one out for Lego Edgar.
Yes, Lego Edgar. Oh,
guy.
The first obese Lego. Yeah, where's Jack? He's on the Lego Ocean, Chinese Ocean Tanker. Yeah, the Ocean Tanker set.
You know? Jack is Lego Hyundai Genesis.
That's right. Right. Get your Lego Hyundai Genesis and Ford Escape to complete the set.
Jeez.
I would so buy that.
who is the most boring couple in that? The season when they lit the nuke off. Remember we had a couple. They were like interned. Remember they were in the internment camp and stuff? They were painfully boring. Like Sherry's sister and this other dude. And
oh, yeah.
It'd be the most boring Lego set ever. Like the Lego, the LA internment camp. Yeah, that's a good one.
Well, it seems to me that the obvious would have to be a Lego MacGyver, correct?
Yes.
That's great.
You could build anything out of anything.
That is a correct answer, yes.
Every piece would be duct tape shaped, but you could build anything out of it.
Duct tape and fishing wire.
Exactly.
All right, I'll just go with the trend. Lego Airwolf. No idea.
That'd be nice.
It's so fun to put together a Lego Airwolf set. So.
Lego Ernest Borgnine.
Lego Ernest Borgnine. Or if they ever released that, then the world would. Lego Ernest Borgnine.
Does he masturbate all the time? His head pops off.
Spring loaded shoulder joint.
All right, well, that's all of them, right? Yeah. Michael, what's yours?
I wanted to see Lego Doctor Who.
That makes sense.
So true. Much history and stuff to play with there, and all the villains and everything. It just could be absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, good one. Okay, very nice. Good start. Good start to this. You already breathed life into this podcast, Michael. Well done. So, Daryl, what do you have?
All right, in tribute to my watching of Battlestar Galactica, robots. Great robots.
Great robots.
Great.
Great. Robots. Great.
Quality robots.
Quality robots.
Quality, man.
We've got the robot from Lost in Space, the television series, not the terrible movie.
I never watched that movie.
Oh, Robbie the Robot?
Matt LeBlanc.
No, Robbie the Robot was from Forbidden Planet.
Oh, no, you're right. That is Forbidden Planet. You're right.
Yep. Was the Lost in Space robot actually functional and utilitarian? Did he actually provide a value add to the crew?
I think so.
He did? Because he didn't look look very efficiently designed, you know.
He had laser beams. He could shoot monsters. And I think he was supposed to be smart.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Extendable arms. They used him as kind of a Segway to get around sometimes. They stood on him as he drove around.
Oh, yeah.
And he constantly terrorized Dr. Smith.
I'm going to go with the greatest of robots before Mac gets in there. The robots from Mystery Science Theater.
There you go.
Good. Tom Servo, protein robot.
Came out, Gypsy.
Well played. Okay, I'll see your Tom Servo and raise you Kevin, Screech's robot from Saved by the Bell.
Excellent.
God.
He does magic. He's assumed self-awareness at some point. I mean, he really does it all. So. He gets Kelly Kapowski aroused. I mean, everything. He does.
Yikes.
Oh, yeah.
It was weird when he later recorded and made his own porno movie.
That was rough.
A porno was kind of odd, but.
Let's see. Okay, how about the interrogation droid from Star Wars?
That's good.
Floating black ball with a little syringe needle sticking out of it. Yeah.
Yeah, they repurposed that as heroin droid later. Like when they got more socially conscious with their toys, it was crack droid. Yeah.
Distributing methadone to all.
That's right.
Maybe that's where Clive Barker got a pinhead from. Syringes.
All right, I don't know. Who's gone? Is everyone gone? Yeah, I think so.
Is Michael gone?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to then go with Vicky from Small Wonder.
Oh, jeez.
terrifying. Absolutely terrifying.
The strongest little girl robot you'll ever find.
God, that was a terrible show. And didn't didn't he knock off a bank, or what was the kid on the show?
I assume so.
Did the kid have problems?
Yeah. Something not too long ago, the story came out.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah.
It's good that he stays busy.
Yeah.
He's still working.
Nice. All right. And actually, Daryl, I'm gonna send you something quick, just for kicks, because you brought up Small Wonder. But
All right.
Eric, why don't you go? What do you got?
I'm trying to figure out the right way to phrase this, but existing biopics, where the person profiled is pretty annoying. So, like, biopics that probably should never have been made.
Oh,
biopics where you hate the subject, annoying biopics. Pick one. Pick whichever one works the best for you. So don't make something up. I want a real one, unless you take mine, in which case, just make something up.
Well, there's one that's coming out that hasn't been released yet. It's Michael Douglas playing Liberace.
That's the HBO one. I see that.
Oh, yeah.
I see that advertised in between my Game of Thrones episodes pretty constantly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Matt Damon's in that one, too.
Yep. Yep.
I guess there's a big clamoring for that tale to finally be told.
How are they approaching it? Is it going to be lighthearted and musical, or is it going to be serious?
It looks like it's going to be serious.
Huh.
Well, it's Liberace, so.
Yeah. It'll be glamorous.
Flashy.
Yes.
Diamonds and sequins. Piano. Glitz.
Well, this one's a stretch, but I'm going to use it anyway, because I'm pretty sure Eric will be fine, because it's not yours, I'm sure. But
yeah, go for
this it. PBS film called Soul Food Junkies. it's kind of a biopic on this guy looking at his dad, who's kind of overweight but loves his soul food, so he just kind of looks at soul food, and it's the history of it and all that. But they do have a quote. Some guy is quoted, and he says, he literally compares soul food and the love of soul food to this is a direct quote, a kind of 20th century genocide. So, yeah, there you go. I kind of checked out after that. But I just felt like at the end, it was like, I mean, okay, this is just a guy who, he's a hard worker and he likes his ribs and pulled pork and stuff. Is that so bad? So. I don't know.
What's this movie called?
Soul Food Junkies. He starts like profiling his dad, so it's kind of the biopic on his dad, and then he kind of branches out to look at soul food in general. You know, okay. It just seems like a killjoy. You know? Food looks delicious. Yeah, relax.
Dave, I'm watching. Just not to derail the conversation, but I just watched the video you sent me.
Yeah, what do you think? That's
thank you.
Yeah,
That was ridiculous and very much
I put that together. That's for you. So there you go.
Thank you.
All right. Sorry. A little inside podcast, basically. All right. Back where we were. So
Okay, so, based on a true story, a very dark and upsetting movie is Mommy Dearest.
Oh, yeah.
That woman is just horrible to her daughter.
Oh, wire hangers.
The wire hangers. And she's just, like, awful to her daughter, then she apologizes, and then you think things are going to be okay, and then she starts being awful again, and then she apologizes, and then you think things are going to be okay, and then she's awful again, and it's the repeating cycle, and it's just, it's a hard movie to stomach.
She cut her poor hair.
Right.
I don't know. I like Joan Crawford overall, so I'm a little ambivalent towards that stuff. Yeah. But
although I kind of want, now that I mention it though, because I haven't seen that movie since forever, and I'm thinking if I were to watch it now, perhaps the camp might show through a little
more.
Yeah,
it's pretty campy. It's pretty campy. And you know, relatively funny, but you know, I don't think Joan Crawford was a real queen of a mother, but you know, so it goes.
It's just amplified by Faye Dunaway doing Joan Crawford.
That's awesome. It's perfect.
Yeah.
Is it on me?
Yeah.
I guess so. Yeah.
All right, I'm going with Sid Vicious and Sid and Nancy.
Oh, there you go.
I'm a big punk fan, but was never a fan of the Sex Pistols, and Sid and Nancy really drove home why.
Although that was Gary Oldman, wasn't it?
It was Gary Oldman. It was Alex Cox movie. It's one of those movies I was supposed to like. Everybody told me I would like, and I hate it. And I hate Sid Vicious. He's worthless. And Nancy, whatever her last name is, was equally worthless, but not as hateable necessarily as Sid Vicious.
Nancy Spungen.
Yes, correct.
Michael,
did you go? I can't remember.
Yeah, we did the Liberace.
Yeah, Liberace, thank you.
That's right, yeah. Well, right. Mine is also on the musical spectrum. I recently rewatched Oliver Stone's The Doors.
Oh, man.
Jim Morrison is just nothing of a person.
That movie is just frustrating.
Yeah, it's not a great movie, but I mean, like, I kind of like The Doors music okay, but like watching that, it's like Jim Morrison is just a waste. I did not feel that he was this misunderstood poet or genius or anything, just that he drank a lot and
an ass. Yeah, when I lived in Santa Fe, there was a restaurant. Val Kilmer had a house outside of Santa Fe, and the woman who owned this restaurant was very vocal about her despisal of Val Kilmer. Because when apparently he was working method. Oh. And when the movie was being filmed, he spent about 6 months not showering.
Yeah.
And she described her experience, like having to physically remove him from the restaurant because he was driving away customers.
No offense, Michael, but this is why everybody hates actors. Okay.
Well, I mean, there are actors, and then there are crazy movie stars.
Okay. Well, well said.
Well, if that story is true, then Meg Ryan deserved all the Oscars that year.
She had to be right next to him.
She had to touch him, and I think you know.
Oh God, so gross. Nice. Well, and you look at those leather pants, and I don't disagree with the woman. Like, it's not, I don't doubt her story. Those leather pants look like they've been on for 6 months.
Disgusting. So, all right, we'll move from that, and I will go next with anticlimactic final showdowns.
Oh.
Well, there's a. Sort of the second final showdown in Scott Pilgrim, and I love that movie, obviously. But there's a kind of a funny final showdown where Scott faces off against Nega Scott, who's sort of like his version of himself. And it seems like oh no, they're gonna like tack on a second ending, and then they turn it into a funny comedy beat. So that was anticlimactic in the best possible way.
No.
Well, I'm gonna go with Kingdom of the Crystal Skull and that ridiculous aliens whirling about the room. Bullshit.
That's pretty rough.
Yeah.
Pretty rough. You know, like a fan recut of that film should just be the stop before those guys show up, insert some footage from Fire in the Sky with D.B. Sweeney, and then end with, like, that wedding, and then I think everything else would make sense. So.
All right, well, I'm going to go with the climax to a movie that I'm reviewing this week, the original 310 to Yuma. which is a fantastic movie. But as it builds up, you sort of expect there's going to be a big showdown, and ultimately, they just get on a train.
Well, they catch the 3:10 to Yuma, right?
Yeah, they're on time.
Like, they delivered what they promised. I mean,
and it's a brilliant
sounds like
movie.
It's more your problem than theirs.
It's well, not the 3:12 to Yuma.
I know. Yeah, I
mean. Agreed. And it's a brilliant movie, but there's no showdown. It's not the high noon.
Well, if it was titled
Let's Go to Town,
Explosions and Guns 2, The Explosioning, then maybe you have a point. Sorry. I just can't back you on this.
It's still anticlimactic. There's not much going on in those last moments.
Okay, we're coming around to me. I'm going to go with The Fifth Element because here we have a movie where Bruce Willis is the, you know, the studly hero, and we're going back to Gary Oldman again is the creepy villain, and they don't actually have any scenes together throughout the movie, so there is no confrontation. You know, Gary Oldman gets taken out, and then they go to the planet and have their weird metaphysical ending. I guess there is ultimate evil, which is supposed to be like some big fireball, but it's not really a character that you can confront. You know, it's just sort of a big fireball. So that would be a probably disappointing confrontation because there wasn't one.
Yeah,
fair enough.
Is that everybody then? I can't keep track of everybody.
Can everyone raise your hands if you've got?
Yes. Okay. Mine is, I think I've brought this up before, but seeing that Star Trek is coming back, Star Trek 4, baby. The Enterprise versus some whalers. I love
whalers.
It. That's my favorite. That's the best.
I love that movie.
That movie is
I
great.
Genuinely love that
Although
movie.
It is so, I mean, it's so 80s and so, like.
It is.
I mean, it really.
To the costumes.
From the costumes to that. You know, the pop culture stuff, obviously, but, you know, and then just to the save the whales. It's like it seems like a punchline these days, but they lived it. They lived save the whales, and they took
it's
on
whales
like $90 billion trying to do so.
Really, all they did was they brought the whales back to the future,
yeah,
so they could communicate with that, you know, thing that was going to destroy the Earth. And then, do you really think the whales survived after that?
Well,
I mean,
that's
you
why
know.
They brought the doctor. She stayed right. Told to watch after the whales.
Yeah, but I think there may be some other stuff going on. I don't think the aliens. I don't mean the aliens. I don't think the whales lived. I think they were brought back. They were used, and they were sold off for parts.
They were sold off.
That's how whaling
turned into wastebaskets.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe the whales make a cameo in the new movie.
Oh, that'd be awesome, huh?
That would be awesome.
That would be great.
Whales in Starfleet uniforms.
Like, I heard there's going to be a lot of callbacks in this movie to mythology, so just get ready. All right, Ensign Moby, Ensign Dick, good to see you again. What's that? Oh,
and then the whale song, and then the subtitles underneath just says double mass.
Double mass awesome. On you.
Yeah. Oh, Star Trek's always breaking barriers, you know. You know, women, Klingons, whale life. Why not?
Sure, this is about the Klingon whale marriage.
This is the next social norm.
That's the final frontier.
It is. Okay. Who hasn't gone yet? Help me out here.
I haven't gone yet.
Go, Mac.
All right. My topic. Oh, first of all, the Netflix queue. I've added the 24 Redemption, the TV movie. I added The Doors. You mentioned Fire in the Sky, so I added Fire in the Sky.
Yeah, Fire in the Sky, like 20 minutes of good stuff and filler, pretty much.
And I added the original 3:10 to Yuma.
Yeah, Fire in the Sky is like 20 minutes of freaky stuff and logging. Like just lumberjacks. Lots
guys
of logging.
In flannel shirts.
Yeah, it's logging and then a little bit of freaky alien action. All right,
okay,
guys.
My topic, metal spikes on objects or clothing.
Good one.
Does Pinhead count?
I've already mentioned him enough, so I don't leave him alone. I don't leave poor Pinhead alone. You're welcome, I mean.
No, I'm just trying to...
How could there not be a character from Mad Max that I'm thinking of that doesn't have...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's the first thing I thought of.
One of those guys with spikes. Who?
Tina Turner in Thunderdome? Doesn't she have some kind of spiked shoulder pads?
I'm not picturing it. Okay, the only thing that pops in my mind is that terrifying mace or whatever that the Witch King was swinging around in Return of the King, The Lord of the Rings.
Oh, yeah.
That was pretty good. Didn't seem like a practical weapon, really, and it ended up screwing him over, you know, at the end. Thank you. But that was a pretty... I think it had spikes. Maybe not. It didn't. I just failed. I think I just failed at this ambush topic.
That's right. A lot of the orcs had those helmets.
There's lots of spikes in a lot of the Rings movies.
Did in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, did Bebop have any kind of spike
on his
collar?
On his shoulder?
Shoulders, maybe shoulder.
A good one.
Spikes and something.
Fine. That gives pop that pop a Secret of the Ooze onto your Netflix queue, Matt.
There you go.
Oh, I know. Star Trek: The Undiscovered Country. The Klingons had the big ass spikes on their shoes.
Oh yeah,
that's good. Yes. Daryl, you have anything?
Everything that I'm thinking had spikes, it turns out doesn't.
Citizen Kane, no spikes.
No spikes. No, I thought Leonard Smalls from Raising Arizona, the Randall Tex Cobb character, had spikes on his jacket. He didn't. Mm. All right, well then, I'm not leaving him alone. I'm going with Pinhead.
Nice.
Look at that. Stole it right from you, Matt, Michael.
That's all right.
I think that's everybody, right?
Okay.
Yep.
For me, I went with Ghost Rider. During the scene in the first movie, he transforms from Nicolas Cage into Ghost Rider while fighting a bunch of guys in the jail. And the fight just, like, stops just so Ghost Rider can stand there and pose for a second so we can see the metal spikes pop out of his shoulder. And then everybody starts fighting again.
Yikes. Nice. Actually, now that I think about it, I could a couple things. Like, so you had the spikes in Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom, right, as the roof comes down on them, the spikes come out. That's pretty cool. And the Goonies, right, the little pit with the spikes. And so there's a lot of – this is one thing that I keep a little inventory of it. We can revisit it sometime. When we inevitably use this topic in 2016 or something. Okay, so, Daryl, you haven't gone yet, right?
No, I did the robot bit.
You did the robot. Is everyone gone? Is that it? Are we done?
You? Did you?
We are done. I did go, I think. Yes. The whales. Yeah, the whales.
Oh,
we are done. Talk about anticlimactic finales. So,
hell.
All right, well, that is it. So if you're going to go see Star Trek, go and enjoy. We will talk about that in depth next week, and maybe we'll talk a little bit of upcoming fall TV shows because there are some stuff that piqued my interest. So that being said, thank you to Mac and Mike and Daryl and Eric and Friday Filibuster. DVDverdict.com is the email, and we will catch you next week. Mac, take us home.
Captain, there be whales here.